guide. So if you want to watch this film with your children, excellent, you can do it.
And of course, it's going to be at Firehouse Cinema, DC TV tonight, premiering. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Does your employer offer to match donations to nonprofit organizations? If so, before your next donation to WORT, please obtain a matching gift form from your employer and include it with your donation. As a 501c3 organization, WORT qualifies for matching gifts from employers. WORT Community Radio thanks its listener sponsors and their employers who match their gifts. Il n'est pas une boîte qu'il ne fréquentait.
Welcome to Madison Labor Radio. Labor Radio is dedicated to bringing news, information, and cultural events focused on working people and the labor movement to the Madison area and surrounding communities. I am Frida Ballard, member of OPEIU Local 39. Your support is necessary to make Labor Radio and all the great programming on WORT possible.
Hi, and I'm Bert Zipperer, a member of MTI Retired. Today we learn about the hands-off rallies in Madison tomorrow and across the country. We dig deep into how the tariffs imposed by the Trump administration will affect working people. We'll get a recap of the historic vote in Wisconsin this week and much more. The morning that I realize brutality and unjust laws cannot defeat us. But who defend the workers who cannot organize?
He's out to cheat us. Money speaks for money. MUVON director Rana Ebting was the first to speak.
Strength in numbers. This is how we will get through this moment. This is how we will push back. And this is how we are going to come back. All of us together. Trump and Republicans are using every tool of the government to implement an extreme and cruel right-wing agenda at a speed by which we have never seen before.
Here is Ashley Woodard Henderson of the Working Families Coalition.
Right now, we're working to recruit over 1,000 working class people to run for office in our communities at all levels of government. And with Trump and Musk dismantling government to enrich the billionaire broligarchy like themselves, we need to put power back in the hands of working people who will fight for us.
Ezra Levine from Indivisible.
Institutions that were supposed to uphold the norms of liberal democracy are failing and falling. Legacy media institutions, universities, law firms, business leaders, one after another, they're cowering, they're complying, they're giving exactly what the fascists in the White House and their goose-stepping accomplices in Congress want. You want courageous institutions? So do I. You want courageous politicians? So do I. We've got to show them what courage looks like. The reason why we protest on April 5th is to tell Trump and Musk and the rest of them hands off today. But we also protest on April 5th, so it's safe to tell them hands off tomorrow. It's up to us. It's up to all of us. When institutions fail, it's up to the people to become the bulwark of democracy against this authoritarian creep by authoritarian creeps. We're the majority. We're telling them to get their grubby little hands off of us, our friends, our families, our schools, our communities, our civil rights, and our democracy.
Here is Randy Weingartner, the president of the American Federation of Teachers.
Why education? Just like why labor? Because public education is the foundation stone of democracy. It's the foundation for kids actually having opportunity, but it's also the foundation stone of democracy. It's a foundation stone of pluralism. It brings communities together instead of separating them apart. And the same in terms of the labor movement. The labor movement is about creating agency so we fight for decent wages and decent health care. We're going to fight for Social Security. And so if they take the labor movement away, if they take our right to collective bargaining away, how do we fight that together? Courts, court of public opinion, commerce, that's how we move Congress. And that's why April 5th is so important.
Here is Kim Anderson, the executive director of the National Education Association.
The one word that I hope folks take away is community, because with community comes courage. And when we have courage to stand up together, we can take collective action. Please mobilize around April 5th. Please join in. Every single free society that has ever toppled an authoritarian oligarchic regime has come together in a multi-issue, multiracial, multi-generational coalition. We've built a strong and big movement to say no. We need to say no. Enough is enough. The corruption, we will not stand. The censorship, we will not stand. The cruelty, we will not stand. And we can beat chaos with community every day of the week.
We heard excerpts from a Move On live stream reporting for Labor Radio. This is Janine Ramsey.
A broad coalition of organizations, including unions, have organized rallies they are calling Hands Off across the nation on Saturday, April 5th, to protest and resist, quote, Trump and Musk's illegal billionaire power grab, end quote. There will be a rally at the Capitol building in Madison from noon to 3 p.m. A number of coalition leaders at the national level spoke at MoveOn.org live stream on Tuesday, April 1st, about the hands-off rallies and the importance of standing up to the Trump administration and his billionaire backers at this time. That was reporting for Labor Radio, Janine Ramsey.
And now, here are some details about the hands-off rally in Madison tomorrow.
This is Erin Johansson with Indivisible East in Madison. On Saturday in Madison, we are inviting everybody to come join us. This is Wisconsin's March Forward and Hands Off Rally, organized by Indivisible and 5051. It's a citizen-led event. We need to protect human rights, democracy, and equality. We know that having people together helps build hope. We also know that basic rights are being stripped from our most vulnerable friends, neighbors, and family members. This is about everyday people joining together to make a statement that this isn't okay with us and that we're going to stand together and we're going to help each other. 12 o'clock is when the rally starts tomorrow, April 5th, at the corner of Mifflin and State Street. There's going to be speakers. There's going to be music. It's a family-friendly, peaceful event. We will have tables at the Capitol before and during the rally. They will be from nonprofits, from organizations that are there to have some answers, to provide some resources. Same with our speakers. Not only will they be telling their own stories of how decisions by this administration is affecting them, they'll also be talking about solutions.
That was Erin Johansson from Indivisible Madison East. Reporting for Labor Radio, this is Janine Ramsey.
The election Tuesday set records in turnout and expenses. Carol Weidel has a story.
Susan Crawford won the Supreme Court election with 55% of the vote. Her opponent, Brad Schimmel, trailed, winning only 45%. Elon Musk supported Brian Schimmel, spending more than $20 million on the election. Some analysts believe that Musk's wealth and visibility in the race hurt his candidate. With a turnout of half the voting age population, the results were announced early. Susan Crawford addressed her supporters.
As a little girl growing up in Chippewa Falls, I never could have imagined that I'd be taking on the richest man in the world. For justice in Wisconsin. And we won! Yeah! And Wisconsin stood up and said loudly that justice does not have a price. Our courts are not for sale.
Nick Ramos, director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, described the high turnout among the voters.
We got over 2 million people in a off-year spring April election is magnificent. It's something that I did not contrive or even think that was possible. And it's because people are not asleep in this moment where it feels like rights are being attacked. It feels like their freedoms aren't as free as what they were, perhaps in different generations. And so people are answering the bell when it's ringing.
Craig Gilbert analyzed the results and described the exceptional circumstances of the race. Writing in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, he had this to say, quote, both sides showed up in record numbers, fueled by unprecedented spring spending, unprecedented organizing, unprecedented attention, unprecedented polarization over Trump's second term, and the massive political stakes in Wisconsin when it comes to control of the state's highest court. Close quote. Now that the liberal majority on the court is maintained, the court will rule in cases regarding abortion, labor unions, and congressional redistricting. In the other statewide race, the state superintendent of public instruction, Jill Underley, won. Her opponent raised nearly twice as much money in the race. In local races, only one school board seat had a competitive race. Martha Saravo won with more than 54% of the vote. Melissa Agar, the current Dane County executive, won re-election with more than 80% of the vote. The South Central Federation of Labor supported all these winning candidates. Sources for this story include a Public Affair Wednesday, Union Labor News, and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Reporting for Labor Radio, this is Carol White.
Tumbling prices and spiking uncertainty have characterized the first 2 days in the stock market after the Trump administration announced the highest U.S. tariffs in over a century on Wednesday. While Wall Street worries about the impacts of a spiraling trade war on their investments, what will the downstream effects be for working families? Labor Radio has the story.
The U.S. stock market has lost over $5 trillion in value in the 2 days since the announcement that the Trump administration would impose tariffs at a rate unprecedented in the 21st century on countries across the globe, ranging from 10% to as high as 54%, and impacting goods exported from countries on every continent. The tariffs are set to take effect after midnight tonight. Donald Trump has long harped on the skewed ratio between imports and exports of the U.S. and its trading partners, infamously centering the issue in his first successful campaign for president in 2015 and 2016. As a net importer of goods, the United States has relied on relatively low trade barriers to keep prices on goods in check for consumers, a fact that is especially true since the turn of the century, when trade agreements like NAFTA hollowed out the country's domestic manufacturing capacity. Wednesday's universal tariffs are the culmination of the administration's long-sought-for answer to capital outsourcing, even while top administration officials, up to the president himself, concede that in the short term, the country might experience, quote, a little disturbance, end quote, in the economy. References to economic disturbance in the context of the tariff debate allude to the fact that, after the tariffs' implementation, consumers will start to see the increased cost of importing goods passed on to them, on everything from coffee to electronics to prescription medicines and more. Such fiscal policy is generally considered, quote, regressive by economists, or most impactful for those earning the least. Working people will necessarily see their cost of living increase dramatically as the effects of the indiscriminate tariffs begin to compound in the coming months, according to Virginia Senator Tim Kaine, who quoted from Labor during a debate on the tariffs placed on Canada.
North American building trades, quote, the United States and Canada share far more than a border. We share a deep, enduring economic and workforce partnership that has strengthened both nations. That partnership is enshrined in the USMCA, a comprehensive trade agreement that President Trump himself negotiated We shouldn't circumvent this agreement. Sheet metal workers, tariff penalties aimed at Canada for non-trade objectives have already caused harsh and unnecessary economic pain for U.S. workers and harm to our nation's construction and related metal fabricating businesses.
Union leaders, especially those representing workers in the manufacturing sector, have rightly sought a return of secure and well-compensated jobs to the country in their respective industries. The means to reach this end have themselves changed over time, but have variously included a push for protectionist trade policy to encourage reinvestment within the country's borders. Yet, implemented in such a widespread fashion, according to Michigan auto worker Sean Crawford, tariffs are unlikely to accomplish their intended goal. Writing for Labor Notes, quote, "In bargaining, there's a truism that if the company doesn't give it to you in writing, then don't believe it. These tariffs promise exactly zero new factories will be built. But a couple things are certain. Vehicle prices will go up, perhaps by as much as $6,400, because auto companies will pass on any tariff costs to car buyers. And production will be disrupted due to decreased sales and logistical wrangling, which likely means layoffs." End quote. And for the workers planning for retirement, a long-term tumbling of stock prices will weigh heavily on financialized retirement instruments like 401k accounts that rely on stability in the stock market. All the more destabilizing since the country's largest socialized retirement program, administered by the Social Security Administration, is currently subject to a massive drawdown under the thumb of the Department of Government Efficiency, with thousands more cuts expected as soon as next week, according to More Perfect Union. As for how the Trump administration's long-touted promise of rejuvenated manufacturing is panning out, the immediate impacts are, at best, a mixed bag. For Hawkeye Area Labor Council executive Richard Moyle, a recent mass layoff at a Whirlpool factory in Amana, Iowa, is an augury of how companies will respond to the incentives created by the tariffs.
These companies are going to react according to what they think they need to do, you know, to continue to make record billions and billions of dollars of profit.
Reporting for Labor Radio, this is Sean Hagerup.
In the wake of a Trump executive order, there was a rally for history education this week in Madison, and labor supporters were there.
Come for one, face us all!
Free Remesa, free them all!
Come for one, face us all!
Free Remesa, free them all!
On March 25th, Rumesa Ozturk, a graduate student at Tufts University, was abducted by masked agents of the Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, in front of her Somerville, Massachusetts home as she was headed to friends to break her Ramadan fast. It was later learned she was sent to a detention center in Louisiana, where, as far as is known, she remains, with a court order for now banning her deportation. A quickly called spontaneous demonstration in support of Ozturk was called, and over 1,000 protesters gathered in Somerville's Powder House Square near Tufts to demand her release. Ozturk is also a member of Service Employees International Union, the SEIU Local 509, which represents Tufts graduate students. SEIU President April Verrett announced a $100,000 advertising campaign and held 18 rallies across the country on Tuesday, demanding the release of Ozturk and also that of Llewellyn Dixon, a University of Washington laboratory assistant and SEIU member, a 50-year resident of the United States who was stopped at Seattle-Tacoma Airport after returning from the Philippines and has been in ICE detention since February. One of the rallies was in Boston near Tufts, which drew reported hundreds of union members and supporters and a number of elected officials, including Massachusetts Attorney General Andrea Joy Campbell.
In no way is the detainment and abduction of Rumesa advancing public safety here in Massachusetts or in this country.
Also on Tuesday, workers at the Capitol Square Starbucks in Madison, members of the SEIU-affiliated Starbucks Workers United, paused work to read a statement that listed unfair labor practices alleged to be continuing under Starbucks management, but which ended with a call for the release of Ozturk and Dixon. The statement is available in a post on the Madison Starbucks Workers United Twitter account. In what we for now must assume is a coincidence, some of the more high-profile abductions by agents of ICE have been against union members. Salvadoran immigrant Kilmar Armando Abrejo Garcia was taken by ICE and illegally deported to El Salvador in defiance of a court order, an act the Trump administration is trying to wave off as a mistake, with no effort to return Garcia from the notorious Salvadoran prison labor camp into which it appears he was thrown. Garcia is a member of the International Association of Sheet Metal Air, Rail, and Transportation Workers, or SMART, which issued a statement saying in part, quote, "In his pursuit of the life promised by the American dream, Brother Kilmar was literally helping to build this great country. What did he get in return? Arrest and deportation to a nation whose prisons face outcry from human rights organizations. SMART condemns this treatment in the strongest possible terms, and we demand his rightful return." Familias Unidos para la Justicia demanded the release of organizer Alfredo Lelo Juarez in Skagit County, Washington, another ICE detention. Other international unions have spoke out against the abductions and attacks on free speech. Mahmoud Khalil, a Palestinian green card holder and activist at Columbia University, on March 8th was abducted by federal agents in front of his 8-month pregnant wife at their apartment in New York City and sent to a detention facility in Louisiana, where he remains. Khalil's arrest was announced by the president of the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, the IUPAT, Jimmy Williams Jr., who wrote in part in an open letter, quote, "From what I can tell, Mahmoud Khalil has moral courage of the type Eugene Debs spoke about more than a century ago in a speech that he was unjustly arrested for. The labor movement has a moral imperative as well as a self-interest to rally behind Mahmoud Khalil." Williams also wrote that Khalil's work in solidarity with United Auto Workers, the UAW, also contributed to his arrest. For Labor Radio, I'm Greg Jaboski. And yes, y'all, you are now in tune to the sounds of the legendary Foundation.
Sam Grover is a senior counsel for the Freedom From Religion Foundation. He spoke to reporter Carol Weidel about the religious exemption case now before the U.S. Supreme Court and the implications for all employees, especially those of all religious organizations.
This is at the Supreme Court, but it really started in Wisconsin. Could you explain how that happened?
Right. So this whole case is about Wisconsin's unemployment insurance program, which requires all employers in the state to pay into the program to protect employees if they become unemployed. Now, Catholic Charities is a subsidiary of Catholic Diocese of Superior, Wisconsin. It's a separately incorporated entity, and the work it does is secular work. It's work that's also done by non-Catholic entities. So it wants to nevertheless be exempted from Wisconsin's unemployment insurance program because there is a narrow exemption to that for churches. The exemption is basically so church employees don't have to be protected by this if the church has some other way of doing that. It's a religious exemption that doesn't apply to Catholic charities, and that's the whole case. Whether this non-religious entity that's affiliated with the Catholic Church should be exempted.
It seems that that might have broader implications for other religious groups as well. Is that the case?
Yes, it is. The Freedom From Religion Foundation filed a brief first with the Wisconsin Supreme Court and a separate one with the federal Supreme Court, pointing out that if the court accepts Catholic Charities' argument and exempts it, well, that argument would naturally extend to all other religiously affiliated organizations that do secular work. And that would include Catholic-affiliated hospitals in the state and nationwide. There are over 787,000 healthcare employees that would potentially lose their unemployment insurance benefits nationwide. In Wisconsin, more than 40% of hospital beds are at religiously affiliated hospitals. So there are huge implications for this case.
This really does affect a lot of workers, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it affects a lot of potential government benefit programs. It's not just unemployment insurance. It's any other government benefit program that employers are required to pay into. That could be Social Security, things like that.
Just tell me what the timeline is on the resolution of this.
So the case was argued earlier this week before the Supreme Court justices, and they seemed, unfortunately, receptive to Catholic Charities' argument. It's hard to read the tea leaves. It's hard to know how broad a ruling the Supreme Court will ultimately come down with. In a couple months, realistically, we'll probably know the result.
Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate your taking the time to talk to me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, and I'm happy to inform the public about the dangers of creating broad religious exemptions to government programs.
Reporting for Labor Radio, this is Carol Weidel.
Our previous story spoke about how unions have come out against abductions of their members and others by ICE. Meanwhile, in the wake of a Trump executive order, there was a rally for history education this week in Madison, and labor supporters were there. Greg Jaboski.
On March 27th, President Donald Trump issued yet another executive order, this one attacking the teaching of history in the United States, in an order specifically targeting the venerable Smithsonian Institution, but making clear that it applied to the entire U.S. educational system. Trump called for an end to what Trump called, quote, divisive narratives and, quote, improper ideology, providing little in the way of specifics, but repeating claims of his right-wing supporters. Trump singled out museums, including the National Museum on African American History and Culture and the In Progress Women's History Museum, claiming, quote, museums in our nation's capital should be places where individuals go to learn, not to be subjected to ideological indoctrination or divisive narratives that distort our shared history. Educators are trying to counter this latest Trump campaign. On Tuesday this week, April 1st, speakers spoke in Madison in front of the Wisconsin Historical Society on Library Mall. Brian Ward, a public high school teacher and vice president of the McFarland Federation of Teachers, spoke on how Trump's order attacks the very function of his profession.
As a teacher, our role is not to indoctrinate students, as some people like to say. Our role is to not tell a one-sided view of history. It is, as I say to my students, it's to teach the good, the bad, and the ugly. And that is all of history, right? And we talk about the events from multiple perspectives and allow students space to come to their own conclusions. And we live in a complex society with millions of different viewpoints. And if we simply, as the executive order says, just don't say anything that disparages the United States, we have nothing much to say in class.
This protest over the protection of history bookended another protest on Tuesday directed against the Biden-era U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Linda Thomas-Greenfield, who three times vetoed U.N. resolutions that would have imposed a ceasefire as Israel's campaign against Palestinians in Gaza continued unabated. Campus supporters of Palestine are another prominent target of the Trump administration. Adam Donahue of the University of Wisconsin Students for Justice in Palestine described how the protests were related.
I think the two things that are really tying them together are being resolute in holding our leaders and structures accountable by being well-informed and having the proper context.
Scott McCullough, Vice President of the Wisconsin Professional Employees Council, AFT Local 4848, and a state employee of the Wisconsin Historical Society, was there. McCullough, who made it clear he was speaking for himself and for his union and not for his employer, tied Trump's attack on history to his overall attack on federal and public sector workers.
Sort of a long-standing position of our union has been the protections and sort of securities around the civil service. So the idea that public sector employees should be nonpartisan, should sort of have the space to do their jobs in a fair and just way and not be sort of thrown around by this or that political administration. And we've really seen with all of Trump's executive orders, and they were explicit about it before getting into office, around getting rid of any of those civil service protections and really wielding these federal agencies in a political manner.
Brian Ward said that teachers' unions play an important role in protecting free expression.
Unions play a significant role in protecting academic freedom and our ability to teach what we should be teaching, right? Now, our goal as teachers is to create well-rounded citizens, and these types of executive orders can tie our hands to actually doing our job. And so I think teacher unions need to we can stand on up for our freedom to teach and do what we are trained to do. And so I think that
was Brian Ward of the McFarland Federation of Teachers, who spoke Tuesday at Madison's Library Mall in support of the teaching of history and against President Trump's March 27th executive order. For Labor Radio, I'm Greg Chabosky.
Union Labor and all community friends are invited to join SEIU Wisconsin Meritor Nurses in solidarity for a Plan to Win Strike Ready rally this Tuesday, April 8th at Brittingham Park, 829 West Washington Avenue, from 1 to 5 p.m. There will be a speaker presentation from 1:30 to 2 p.m. See you there.
I'm Frida Ballard. Thank you to the Labor Radio Collective, including reporters Greg Jaboski, Janine Ramsey, Carol Weidel, Sean Hagerup, Brian Novinska-Lois, Carlos Davalos, Assistant Robin G., and Damage Control Specialist Shali Pittman. Special thanks to Keith Steffen, our reader coordinator, and to all of our readers and the members of IBEW Local 2304 WORT Staff Collective.
Aren't Shali and Frida amazing? And I'm Bert Zipper. We would like to also thank all the generous contributors to Labor Radio and WORT. Please stay tuned for the Blues Cruise with the amazing Dave Watts and the fabulous Professor Bill Clark. Have a good night.
And you are listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
WORT is excited to be in our 50th year. And to help celebrate, we are hosting the opening night of Madison's newest venue, the Atwood Music Hall. Join us on Friday, June 13th, for a great night honoring Clyde Stubblefield. The night features performances from Mama Dig Down's Brass Band, The Funky JBs, VO5, Rare Element, DJ Trevor Banks, and Kaboom Box. Andy Moore from the Friday 8 o'clock Buzz will host the evening celebrating 50 years of WORT and the grand opening of Madison's newest venue at 1925 Winnebago Street. Proceeds from the evening benefit WORT. Tickets are $25 in advance and available now at theatwoodmusichall.com. Be sure to shine up your dancing shoes and grab your tickets before they're gone.